Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today our guest is Liz Grierson, co-owner of Maine Intercultural Communication Consultants, LLC, and we're discussing the topic of overcoming intercultural issues in the workplace. Welcome, Liz.
Thanks so much, Tawny. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I am really excited to be having this conversation with you today. You and I have talked on other occasions, and I think that the work that the Maine Intercultural Communication Consultants is doing is so very important to, I think, to the world, to our culture, our community, but also to the work environment, to help people understand kind of the importance of what you're advocating and what you do. So let's kind of start at the beginning and let our listeners understand a little bit more about you. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to become one of the co-owners of Maine Intercultural Communication Consultants.
Well, thanks so much, Tawny. My interest in how people understand people who are different from themselves really started at an early age. Some of your listeners may remember Samantha Smith, who was a girl from Maine who wrote to the leader of the then Soviet Union, essentially asking the question, you know, why don't we get along? Why can't we come to an understanding about each other? And that, you know, from the age of 8 years old, really inspired me and resonated with me and got me thinking and curious throughout my academic career about how do people navigate difference? Why do people fear what they don't understand? And from that, why do really, bad things happen in the world as a result of this misunderstanding? I was lucky enough in high school to be part of an exchange program in Novosibirsk, Siberia, which really informed then the work that I did in college, which was about women and gender studies, particularly about how race and class tie into gender. From there, I went on to graduate school and also was a high school teacher at Lake Region High School, where I went to school. So in 4 years as a student wasn't enough, I went back to teach there for 4 years. And in that time, I really thought about how can we bring some of these ideas about social justice, about equality, into the high school setting? How can we equip students with the skills to deal with people who are different from themselves, whether we're talking about class, whether we're talking about religion, because certainly in rural Maine in the late 90s, race was not at the forefront of conversation. From my time at Lake Region as a teacher, I then went to Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, where I was at first a high school teacher there and then later taught at the American University in Dubai. It was at that point that I really started to do some research around understanding what this field of intercultural communication. In my classroom, there were students from all over the world, not just Dubai, but from all parts of Asia and Africa and Europe. And there we were with this common goal of whether it was analyzing literature, whether it was learning how to speak in a confident way in front of a crowd. We were all together in this common goal. And also, what made that classroom so rich were the differences that everyone brought to the conversation. And so that really, in terms of the educational realm, really gave me some ideas about, how can teaching really be inclusive? How can our intention of really leveraging the strengths of each student, their cultural backgrounds, really manifest in the classroom?
And now, so, I would imagine that there was both similarities and differences. I mean, going from Lakes Region High School to Dubai, I would presume some pretty significant cultural differences. But at the same time, I know I've seen discussion about, like, teenagers are teenagers, and there's always going to be aspects about our personhood or who we are that doesn't change based off of geography and culture and religion and those type of things. And specifically, I mean, in the work that I do, I've seen some really interesting studies about personality traits and characteristics about lawyers all over the world, about some perfectionist tendencies and lack of resilience and kind of some really interesting things that don't matter based off of culture and borders. When you made that transition between those two positions, did you recognize or see some of that in addition to the differences?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that makes this work so much fun, really, is to find both those commonalities and those differences. I think we get in trouble if we go too far in either direction and say, oh, we're all the same, nothing else matters, or we're so different and that's the only thing that matters. And that's one of the things that we do at Maine Intercultural Communication Consultants, is we really encourage people to find that connection, to find those similarities. So, for example, being a parent, being a mother, being a father, there are certain things that are universal, that love that we have for our children. But perhaps how we show that love may look different in different cultural contexts. And so that's exactly, that was one of the things that was so exciting about moving from Maine to the United Arab Emirates, is to see, oh my gosh, yeah, kids want to, have fun and go out and enjoy each other's company. And the way what that looks like, how they do that, may look different given that you're in a multinational, multicultural, large city versus small town Maine. And so exactly, that's the real joy that can come in doing this work more generally, is that you do discover that there are unexpected similarities. And in finding those connections, you can also build that trust so that then you can have some conversations about the differences.
Really cool point. So you were teaching in Dubai, and then tell me about your story after Dubai.
Sure. I moved back after 5 years in Dubai to Portland, and did some teaching at the University of Southern Maine and also at Portland Adult Education. And that's where I met Deb Brighting, who is the other co-owner and co-founder of Maine Intercultural. She and I were both working with highly skilled, highly trained foreign-born professionals at Portland Adult Education, really helping them to boost both their English skills as well as their job-seeking skills. And what we were finding was that we were doing a lot of work with these students to help them understand, navigate in cultural similarities and differences. And then they were going into the workplace, and many of the workplaces didn't have the practice of navigating these kind of differences. And so there was sometimes miscommunications that absolutely could have been avoided if the employers had just a little bit more training around cultural competency and around understanding how to navigate differences. And so Deb and I just became really passionate and said, hey, there's a missing piece here. And I think we, with our skill sets of having worked with foreign-born, foreign-trained professionals, and also we've both lived internationally ourselves, I think we could bring something to the table that could be really valuable to the state of Maine.
Absolutely. No, I think you definitely hit the nail right on the head. And it's something that I hear from a lot of organizations, or unfortunately, I see during the course of litigation where there was just a general misunderstanding from a foundational level of different aspects of either communication style or expectations between the parties. So you've given us some background, and I think our listeners probably have an idea of the Maine Intercultural Communication Consultants and what you all do, but why don't you give kind of an understanding to our listeners about both what you do in the community kind of generally, and then additionally in workplaces throughout Maine?
Sure. Well, we work in, across sectors. We've worked in education sector with both K through 12 as well as colleges and universities. We've worked with attorneys like yourselves and with law firms in and around Portland. We've also worked in the nonprofit sector. And the healthcare sector. I'm sure there's something else I'm forgetting. Oh, state and local government as well. But anywhere people are navigating difference is where we can help. And so we do this in a number of different ways. One of them is we do a foundational training with folks that essentially just gives us language and a framework to talk about difference in a way that doesn't feel scary or terrifying. I mean, that's the thing, right? People get really nervous talking about difference. They're afraid they're going to say the wrong thing, do the wrong thing. Or alternately, sometimes people think, oh, I've got this. There's nothing more I need to learn. I do this all the time. And so what we really do is we like to start with this foundational training that gives people some skills, some confidence, a tool to be able to work across difference. And from there, you know, we can do a lot of different things. At that point, some folks like to go on to some of our other training modules. We do a conflict style inventory that can be really useful. But the bulk of our work recently actually has been with a tool called the Intercultural Development Inventory that we can talk about in a bit more detail later. But essentially what this tool does is it quantifies how an individual or an organization navigates difference. And then from there, Deb and I are able to customize either an individualized development plan to do intercultural coaching with, for example, superintendents or CEOs, leaders. We're finding a lot of interest, especially for folks you know, who are leading organizations. They really want to understand how they're navigating difference. Also with HR professionals, we've heard from a number of folks in the HR field that the IDI has really given them insight about how they can more effectively reach and connect with their staff. So we can start from a number of different places, but the idea is to understand where an organization is or an individual is in their intercultural development, and then provide the support and guidance to help them reach their goals.
So I think that there's so many interesting avenues and discussion points to all the things that you just said, Liz, and I'm so excited to dig down deeper into a number of the different elements. I think that one of the ways in which I've seen this firsthand, especially in discussions with individuals in management roles and from an operational perspective, is this idea or concept that when somebody doesn't understand the appropriate language or what they're supposed to do, that they just shut down or they refuse to interact because they feel as though, well, if I refuse to interact, then that's safest for the organization. I won't say the wrong thing. Like, am I supposed to say Black or African American? Or if the individual is transgender, what am I supposed to refer to him or her as? Or it's just going to be easier if I stop speaking, because then I can't put my foot in my mouth, because that's what I most often am doing. And I think that kind of talking about some of the tools that your organization can provide to all levels of management and the organization is so important, because it's a need that everyone has on a daily basis when they stop and say, oh my gosh, what if I don't know what to say in this situation? How do I respond next? Especially when it's regarding differences, something that you don't understand. And earlier in our discussion, you already said you fear what you don't understand. So I think the idea or concept of helping people to understand the realm of things that they don't understand is just so grand.
Well, thank you. I mean, I really think that we all have unique aspects of our identity, and part of this work is to, you know, if we're struggling to sort of understand how to navigate perhaps transgender issues, part of the work is also to look within ourselves and be like, okay, as a cisgendered person, what does that mean about me too? So it's not just only about understanding the other, but it's also about understanding the self and perhaps what advantages have come as a result of some of the memberships that group memberships that we have. I know that it's often, it feels safer in the moment, right, to not say something. But we have to kind of get back to what our goal is or what our intention is. And then if the impact of what we're doing is matching that. So, for example, not talking about difference doesn't make it go away. And it also doesn't help the person who is different from the majority feel okay. It helps us feel okay. And in doing that, even though it feels safer in the moment, we may inadvertently be privileging our own experience, our own comfort, when what we really need to do is think, okay, if I really have an opportunity here to either create connection or disconnection, and so how can I build on our similarities to create trust such that we can then have a conversation about difference? And that's going to look different depending upon the people and the context.
I think those are all really, really great points, Liz. We're going to take a really quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
We're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez from Verrill, your host, and I'm talking with Liz Greeson, co-owner of Maine Intercultural Communication Consultants, LLC. And today we're discussing the topic of overcoming intercultural issues in the workplace. Before the break, we got an outline, and we got to hear Liz's story and what brought her here to this moment to start and work with organizations throughout Maine regarding kind of challenges in overcoming intercultural communication issues. And I say that in the broadest sense because I think communication issues normally are at the foundation of all the other issues that we experience in the workplace. And I think more globally as well. And those are some of the things that Liz is discussing before the break. Liz, one of the things I'd like to dive into a little bit is this idea or concept of diversity. And it's definitely a phrase that everyone in human resources keeps at top of mind, but it's also a term or phrase in which some individuals or organizations, when they hear the phrase DEI, they get prickly about it. They get prickly about it, and especially in Maine, when they look at it from a very focused perspective and say, like, we only have who we have. We can only be so diverse. What would you say to organizations who have leaders or individuals who maybe are looking at diversity from a very narrow lens?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tawny. Thank you. The interesting thing, right, about DEI or diversity is it's often framed only in terms of race. And so that makes it easy, and I say that in quotes, for folks in particularly rural areas of Maine to say, you know what, this doesn't involve me. We are a primarily white place. This is not an issue. And what Deb and I really do, and what's at the core of Maine Intercultural, is really broadening our understanding of diversity, of difference. I mean, diversity, right, is a word that just means difference. And I mean, if we think about the differences that really are at the core of places like rural Maine, I mean, we have generational difference. We have economic difference. I think about growing up in Bridgeton, you know, really those were really at the core of a lot of the differences on the playground, for example. I mean, you know, class was.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And so what our work does is it builds on the differences that we're familiar with. It says, you know, in your workplace, are there different generations? How is that going? You know, are you finding that if you are in Gen X, that there are points of frustration with millennials or with baby boomers? And so how can we sort of start with navigating difference in that sense? And what we're finding is that the skill sets that we help people to develop in those inroads can then be transferable to more to other realms of difference. So perhaps people feel some I forget the word you use, prickliness around.
Prickliness.
LGBTQ issues. Those sorts of things that people, as you mentioned before, kind of shut down around. And so that's what's unique about our organization is I'm from Maine. I'm from rural Maine. I deeply understand, you know, the culture that we have here. And that makes us able to meet people where they are. I think that's another reason that people may be prickly is they get you know, some DEI training from their corporate office elsewhere, or they have someone from New York or Boston come in and who really doesn't understand the culture of Maine. And so we think that if we're going to do this work, let's make it meaningful. Let's meet people where they are. Let's use frames of reference that make sense to us as Mainers. And let's build on that to then get to a place where we can talk about things like race or transgender issues that many of us grew up thinking was bad to talk about, or that we were shamed for talking about, or that we were told that, you know, not talking about this was sort of the ultimate sign that we were being respectful. And so that's the other thing that can be challenging is we're kind of unlearning some of the lessons that we learned in childhood about these issues. It's particularly, and when I'm saying we in this context, I'm particularly talking about those of us who are white and from Maine.
Yeah, and I think that you make a lot of very good points there, and something that I would imagine that all of our listeners have experienced, whether it's through their own experiences or dealing with managers in their organization. I'm trying to better understand them when they say something like, well, where are you from? But no, I don't mean like what part of Massachusetts. I mean like what country did you come from before that, or something like that, where they're like, well, I didn't mean it that way. And it's like, well, there's appropriate ways to have these discussions, and there's, you know, inappropriate ways to have these discussions. But it's really just, in a lot of situations, a lack of tools to accomplish what the employee or the manager is looking to accomplish.
Right, because the goal is creating connection, right? When the intention in asking someone where they're from is often to better understand that person, to say, hey, you know, I want to know more about you. I want to understand more about you so that we can build trust. But what we don't realize sometimes in doing that is the impact of asking someone where they are from. That perhaps that is the first question that a person of color encounters every day, you know, when meeting someone. You know, where are you from? And the subtext in what is heard is, you don't look like you belong here. And so that can be, even though that's not our intention, and I think people really get caught up on that, but like, you know, well, I would ask anyone that. I would, you know, it wouldn't offend me. Well, you're right. It wouldn't offend you because it doesn't have the same impact. And so having that humility and that curiosity of what is the impact of my question can really go a long way in making that connection and building that trust with people who are unlike yourself.
Now, earlier today, you talked about a process that you use in the organization called the Intercultural Development Inventory. I'd like to talk a little bit about that, because based off of your really brief description, it sounds like some of the things we're talking about now about understanding yourself becomes part of this inventory. So can you tell the listeners a little bit about this inventory that you use with clients and organizations you work with?
Sure. I would argue, and really it's supported by research and our own professional experience, that the single most important thing you can do for your diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives or work around navigating difference is to know how you personally and how the organization approaches difference. And the tool that is able to quantify that is the IDI. It does this through essentially five different orientations. So depending upon where an organization or individual places along this continuum of five orientations, we can make some real predictions about the extent to which people in non-dominant groups or sometimes called minority groups will feel included or excluded. And so this can really be predictive of retention. It can also inform the ways in which Maine Intercultural would customize support around that, whether that's training, whether that's consulting, whether that's coaching, et cetera. And so in terms of the tool itself, it's a 50-item online questionnaire that is administered through Maine Intercultural. We did not develop it. This is an internationally used tool. It's available in several different languages. It is really the premier instrument used for PhD dissertations around intercultural communication. It's used in academics, in the private sector as well. And so it's administered through Maine Intercultural, and we then would give you, if we're doing it individually, just one link for you to fill it out, or if we're doing the IDI for a whole organization or for a leadership group, we would give unique usernames to each person and then come up with an average of the score to come up with a group score. And so the process is, let's say that we're working with an HR team, for example. Each person would take the inventory online. You would then meet as a group with us at Maine Intercultural, and we would do what is called a group debrief of group results. And so that is the average of all the individual scores. Based on the group score, we could make some predictions about the strengths and the weaknesses or opportunities for growth for that particular group. Particularly if it's an HR team, there's research that indicates that the farther along you are in your development, the more success as a group, the more success you will have recruiting and retaining diverse staff. And so that's kind of interesting that there's research-based information that can say, hey, where a group is on their development can really reveal some profound information about recruitment and retention of diverse workers.
I'm guessing that based off of that description, there's a number of listeners who are saying to themselves, oh, this would be really great for my organization, or I think based off of what I've heard so far, that this is something we'd be interested in. And I'm also guessing that there's some listeners that are saying to themselves, we are not ready for something like this. Before an organization kind of takes that step to do or to review their competencies, what are some of the things that you suggest that they have in place or ready to do next as a result of receipt of the information? Because there's a lot of theories of thought that while information is great and wonderful, that there are situations in which the more information we have maybe isn't as helpful as we thought it would be. That just because we have more information, if we're not going to do anything with it or if it doesn't change how we operate, that it doesn't make sense to have that information. Do you have suggestions as to things that companies should prepare or have set up to do even before they perform or review these competencies?
That's an interesting question. We have approached things a couple different ways with that. Sometimes if we have an organization that is particularly reticent or concerned about it, or just kind of fearful of jumping into this, what we'll do is even before the intercultural development inventory, we may do that initial 3 to 4 hour foundational conversation or foundational training that just gets people feeling in the mindset to be able to explore this.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And I guess one of the things that I would continue to think about is that there's people who are listening who are saying, you know, Bob in accounting is never going to go for this. Do you find that that 3-hour training helps to get everyone on board so that it does make sense to move forward with performing the competency analysis?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really one of the takeaways that we've heard from clients over and over again is, oh, now that I know what this is about, this is we can do this. You know, we help to people to develop that confidence to also realize that this isn't about shaming and blaming. I mean, that Deb and I are educators by training. And so in that three-hour training, we customize our approach to really meet the group where it is and to also have opportunities for people who are absolutely not bought in at all to have an entry point. We also have opportunities for people who've been thinking about this for a while to get something out of that three-hour training. And so that would be our initial recommendation is if you do have a group that you're kind of like, oh, I don't know if this is really what we're ready to do, I don't know if we're ready to dive in, that can be a great entry point to have these conversations such that people are then ready. They're in the mindset, they're ready to then take action by taking the IDI, and then based on the information that we get in the IDI, there are specific next steps in terms of intercultural growth, in terms of developing a culture of inclusivity that we can take based on where the group is.
It's interesting because I feel as though we consistently refer to one of the phrases that you said at the beginning of the interview, and that is people fear what they don't understand. And here we are, and we're looking at it almost two layers of that fear. First, I can't communicate with my team members or applicants or customers because of some cultural, you know, I don't want to say misunderstandings, but cultural differences that are affecting the communication style. And then to add on to that, I culturally am struggling with taking some type of assessment or competency because I feel it's touchy-feely science. I don't either want to know the information or I don't believe that the information is reliable. So you are struggling against two layers of this fear before you can even get to a place in which you can move forward and to help educate individuals. So that must be a really tough thing to face, I would guess.
That's why we have designed our initial foundational training in the way that we have, where it's strength-based, where it's coming from a place of curiosity versus judgment, where we're seeing that we all have strengths. We all actually have some skills around navigating difference. Perhaps it's, as we said, in the realm of class, perhaps it's in the realm of generational difference. And so we try and develop that sense of curiosity to replace some of that fear, to say, hey, you actually have some experience here, and we're going to build on that. We also try and really take away this idea of assessment or evaluation and more about, okay, as a group, how can we then better achieve the goals that we have? And knowing where we are in our development can give us some particular strategies to do that.
And I would guess that that group feeling definitely helps everyone to understand that this is an organization-wide thing and it's not pointing blame at any one individual or person within the organization. So that, I think, is absolutely great.
Absolutely. And depending upon where a group is in their development, I mean, it really, again, the feedback that we've got from other clients is all of a sudden it gives language. It gives non-judgmental language to talk about really difficult things. And then even just having that language then allows for conversations around this to happen in a way that gets us to our goals.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We will be right back.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs and ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Veral Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Veral Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Veral Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at veraldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Veral-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez from Veral, your host, and today we're talking with Liz Grierson, co-owner of Maine Intercultural Communication Consultants, LLC, and we're discussing the topic of overcoming intercultural issues in the workplace. Before the break, one of the things that we had been discussing with Liz was intercultural competency analysis and how the process or program works for an organization and steps that an organization can take to get buy-in from leadership so that the results of this developmental inventory is helpful for the organization. Liz, I think it would be helpful for our listeners to have a bit of an understanding about what some of the different competency aspects or groups are and how that would affect an organization. So would you mind if we kind of jumped through and went through the five different inventory categories?
Sounds great.
So my understanding is the first one is denial. So what would, if the competencies showed a high score in denial, what could that mean for the organization?
Sure. An organization in denial may be made up of folks who are just sort of confused about why, you know, why do we need to learn more about cultural difference? You know, this isn't, you know, culture shouldn't matter. And why do we have to talk about this? An individual in that organization might miss or avoid difference. In terms of the organization itself, there's a real focus on fitting in. Here's the way things are done, and from those in leadership, sort of not an understanding that the cultural groups you may belong to may be affecting the rules and policies that are made. Organizations may just be blindsided by race, gender, or cultural issues. Like, I didn't think that was an issue here. You know, we don't talk about it, so it doesn't exist. So we don't, you know, why would someone bring up something about race? That doesn't make sense to us. And so an organization just really isn't attentive to difference. And so that means that non-dominant group members or folks who are not in the majority will feel unsupported and ignored. What that means for Maine in particular, right, is if there is anyone who's even from New York or Massachusetts coming to work here. I mean, that's a cultural difference. And so if you do all this work to get someone to, you know, to move to Maine from another, even another state, and they don't end up staying, they could have perhaps feel unsupported and ignored because they didn't, quote unquote, fit in.
And I think that becomes a really interesting, I hear that all the time. I hear the, this isn't a problem or we don't have this issue. And it might be that from that individual's point of view, but when, and let's talk about different generational differences, that's coming from a baby boomer and you have a Gen Z person or a millennial kind of sitting in the back of the room being like, actually, that's why I'm currently applying for other jobs, is because you don't think this is an issue. So I think that that's a great way to understand that denial aspect.
I think it's a real opportunity to ask, what is our goal? You know, is our goal to recruit and retain? I mean, if we're thinking about different generations, if that's the case, then an organization needs to start thinking about generational differences and the different needs that Gen Z or Gen X has. I mean, in terms of communication, in terms of, well, remote working is a little tricky right now, but we all are working remotely. But that may be going back to, you know, if Maine has a shortage of workers, which we do with an aging population, organizations are really going to need to start to be more adaptive to all different types of difference. And so for many folks, starting to think about this in terms of generation is an appropriate entry point.
And the next topic, or one of the next points, I think, is called polarization. Can you explain for our listeners what an organization that has strong polarization, what that could lead to within the organization?
Sure. Polarization as an orientation can manifest in two different ways, but both ways are very evaluative and very kind of a good versus bad, us versus them. It can manifest in this thing called defense, where we're kind of like, oh, my culture is good and your culture is bad. It can also manifest in another way called reversal, meaning my culture is bad, your culture is good. So it's kind of interesting in that it has two different manifestations. But essentially, if we're thinking about it in terms of an organization, again, the real focus is on fitting in, but to sort of layer on top of denial, where denial just isn't kind of like, why are we even talking about this? This isn't even an issue. Polarization sees that it's an issue, but is pretty evaluative about it, doesn't think it should be, doesn't see the value in diverse perspectives or ways of doing things, like, oh yeah, there's a difference, but my way is better, and if you want to be here, you need to do it my way. There's often a sense of superiority of the organization, of like, well, we do it this way because we know best, and we've been doing it this way for a long time, this has always worked, this has never been a problem. And how this can manifest in HR issues is then the person who's raising the issue starts to become the problem. That person isn't a culture fit, that person ends up leaving, when really it's an opportunity for the organization to say, okay, how is our culture inadvertently perhaps not valuing different perspectives? And of course, there are so many studies that are revealing that the more diverse perspectives you have in an organization, the more economically viable, the more creative, the more successful an organization can be. And so it really is often a focus on the past versus a curiosity about the future. And so then non-dominant group members really experience this, a sense of bias of their opinions and contributions not being recognized. And so again, much like denial, an organization in polarization will find that even if they have success recruiting someone who is a member of a non-dominant group, that person will likely not stay because there isn't a sense of inclusivity, meaning their experience and their perspective isn't valued or seen as valuable.
I think this is interesting because we hear so often not a good culture fit, and I usually try to push back against clients who use that language because I find that it means, well, they're not like me. But I think you've added a whole nother dimension about it from an organizational standpoint, and so that's really helpful as we're talking about polarization. My understanding of another term, kind of competency, is minimization. What would an organization that has a high minimization rate, what would that look like?
Sure. So minimization also can manifest in two different ways. There's minimization from a dominant group perspective, where someone from a dominant group perspective might lack awareness about bias, power, privilege. Someone in a non-dominant group, and again, I'm using dominant and non-dominant, meaning generally folks who are in the majority in the particular organization, and as well as the social power that often goes along with that. With minimization, non-dominant group members kind of go along to get along. As an example, like for those of us who identify as women, if we've ever been the only woman in a room full of men, we may not raise our hands or speak up in the conversation because it doesn't feel, there's a sense that maybe our opinion isn't welcome, or that we may be standing out because we're a woman or dismissed because we're female. So that's one way to think about dominant, non-dominant. In terms of the organization, what we see with organizations in minimization is that they often will overestimate their cross-cultural competence, that they'll think, oh, we got this. We're good. We deal with diversity all the time. And we just find that if we focus on similarities, everything's okay. But that's really from a dominant group perspective. And privileging, like we talked about earlier in the program, is when dominant group members let's be very explicit now. For example, white people don't talk about race because it makes us feel uncomfortable. What we're doing is we are creating a situation where people of color don't feel fully heard, where they feel like they have to go along to get along in order to survive in our organization. And therefore, their full potential, their full contribution is going to be unrecognized. Organizations in minimization have real blind spots around their own bias and the fact that either racial bias or class bias or even generational bias may be manifesting in the policies and procedures that are in place. A strength of the minimization is that people are really trying to enact policies that treat everybody equally, but not realizing that in treating everybody the same as you, that's perhaps not equitable. And so that's the real work of minimization, is to start to look beyond this idea of colorblind, for example, and really saying, oh, difference doesn't matter, we're all going to treat everybody the same, but not realizing that that sameness is how you want to be treated. And in fact, it may land very differently on someone who is different from yourself.
And I think that this can create some really interesting legal kind of discussions, and we don't have time to dive into it, but I do, it's so interesting to hear this because I think there are also, you know, some of the legal aspects of it tie in nicely and sometimes not so cleanly into this discussion. We're going to take a quick break, but you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, WLOBradio.com. When we return, we're going to talk about kind of the last two competencies, but we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez from Verrill, your host. And today we've been talking with Liz Grierson, co-owner of Maine Intercultural Communication Consultants, LLC, and we're discussing the topic of overcoming intercultural issues in the workplace. And before the break, we had gone through different competencies, and we discussed three of the five, but I want to touch on the last two competencies, which are acceptance and adaptation. Liz, tell us a little bit about what an organization would look like that is high on the acceptance scale.
Sure. An organization in acceptance is really active in its efforts to recruit and retain a diverse workforce. And really, again, we're talking diversity in many realms. Managers are encouraged to not only value cultural diversity, but are trained how to. And in this particular orientation, diverse or non-dominant group members are feeling understood but not completely engaged. And so that's the difference between acceptance and adaptation. Acceptance is really deeply understanding the difference, but not always confident in how to adapt to the difference or how to bridge across the difference. In adaptation, organizations and individuals really have a deep understanding of cultural commonality and difference. They understand their own cultural context as well as other cultures and how to build on similarities so as to navigate difference. There's an understanding of equality, treating everyone equal versus equity, really getting curious about how to not use the golden rule of treating everyone the same, but perhaps more like a platinum rule of treating everyone as they want to be treated. There's a mindset of curiosity and adaptability. Organizations are encouraging the development of intercultural competence for all staff. It's not just in leadership. It's really infused in all elements of policies and procedures. Differences is seen as a resource and a strength. And you'll find that because diverse or non-dominant groups are feeling included and engaged, that people of diverse backgrounds are hired and retained, and they're interwoven into the fabric of the organization or school.
I think this becomes really interesting because for a lot of individuals listening, I think they would presume that the only companies that would use your services are individuals who are in that acceptance or adaptation kind of mindset, because they have to understand or recognize that there's an issue that either needs to be solved or that they need to be more prepared or have more tools in their toolbox to deal with. But I think over the course of our conversation, it's become really clear to me that that's not, in fact, the case. The case is that every organization would benefit from kind of having a training from your organization and understanding who they are as an organization, and that there's nothing to be minimized or to be ashamed of, whether you are in a denial group, a polarization, minimization, acceptance or adaptation, kind of high organization function type arrangement. But knowing that so that you can respond accordingly and help to create a better cultural organization is really the focus of doing that.
Absolutely, Tani. I couldn't have said it better myself. There is such power in knowing where you as an organization or you as an individual are in your own development, such that then you can really use that to, I mean, we can't change what we don't acknowledge. I think Dr. Phil might have said that once, right? or maybe it's better to quote Maya Angelou, when we know better, we do better. But that idea of just like, we've got to get real about where we are in our development so that then we can build on the strengths that we have and also really acknowledge where we have opportunities for growth. And so in that sense, there's not a good or bad orientation, right? Because there's an opportunity everywhere, and knowing where you are, then that really allows you to have, you know, targeted trainings that, or targeted consulting that meets you as an organization where you are. And that can be one of the reasons that diversity and inclusion efforts fail, is sometimes you might have, you know, a diversity consultant from away, so to speak, come in and really deliver a training that's meant for an organization in acceptance and adaptation, but your organization may be in polarization, and then that training can do more harm than good.
Yeah, that is definitely, I think, one of the biggest takeaways here. And it's interesting that we're ending on this. That wasn't planned. All our listeners, that wasn't planned. But it comes down to that fact that there's no bad finding as a result of this, because no matter what the finding is, you're able to grow as an organization and create a healthier culture.
Absolutely.
Liz, thank you so much for your time today. It's been educational for me, and I believe for our listeners as well. And we really appreciate your time in explaining all the things that your organization is doing and how it can help to create stronger cultures and organizations throughout Maine, and I'd say throughout the country.
Well, thank you so much, Tani. I appreciate you inviting me to be a part of this conversation.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.